encouraged, not burdened by the history that they create. They know what is expected of them. They are Manchester United.
To the Busby Bay Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, joined once again by Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. And today we have a special guest who you will know from his work at the Manchester Evening News as a United fan brand writer, as well as his own blog, Casey Evans. Welcome to the show.
Cheers for having me. Let anyone in here, as they say. But yeah, cheers for having me. I'm glad to talk about United, get some stuff out, because it's been a long season of very mixed responses.
Yeah, don't we know it? We were just running into the problem of having anything to talk about by the time the season ended. We weren't even talking about the games anymore by the end of it.
Oh yeah, I tuned into one where there was about 15 minutes of just you and Nathan talking about Elden Ring and Polly just being very confused. So I quite enjoyed that because at the time I was playing Elden Ring, but yeah, I kind of got the vibe of we're like, we can't say United are bad in a different way. We've said all of the ways that United are bad. Now we need to think of something else to fill the time with.
Congrats to us, we found our target audience.
Yeah, Polly's the only one on this podcast who is not an Elden Lord, by the way.
Yeah, to be fair, we're running out of ways to say how good that game was too.
So. scraping the barrel, just keep going. Go back into Dark Souls games, talking retrospective.
New game plus, baby.
So, Casey, just... I know that looking back on this season, obviously hindsight is a really big deal, but just coming into this year, were you as excited as a lot of us were with maybe not expectations for a title challenge like some on Twitter said they had, but you know, just anything better than a sixth place finish with a third manager coming in?
Yeah, I think because obviously the season starts before the transfer window closes, I was kind of optimistic. Obviously, Some things didn't get addressed, as we probably will go on to talk about in a bit. But at the start of the season, I was like, well, there is obviously some disparity. Liverpool had their injuries. Chelsea had their kind of meltdown. Leicester were there and bouts and then weren't there. And it was kind of like, yeah, we might actually have a chance to do something interesting this season. I thought a cup might be on this table. I thought Champions League qualifying was pretty much on the table. I didn't quite think the league was on the table, just because why would anyone, a lot of people did, but why would anyone think it was? At the end of the day, City and Liverpool, as we've now gone and seen, are so much better than everyone else. But I was optimistic. I was optimistic that I was at least going to enjoy it, because as I've always said to people, my mentality is I just enjoy watching football. Like, I'm a United fan. Trophies are great and everything, but if I can go to Old Trafford, I can go to and just sit down with a drink and like watch United and actually enjoy watching them for 90 minutes a week. I'm pretty satisfied, which would probably get me crucified in some circles of United Twitter. But yeah, I'm just satisfied to enjoy watching football. So
I'd settle for like 45 minutes, especially if it's like the latter 45 minutes of the match. Like sometimes the first 45, especially last season, sometimes the first 45 could be frustrating, but the last 45 seemed to deliver, and that was good enough.
It was like the Mourinho 4-0s. They were great. You were like, I'm suffering. I'm having my second beer. I'm suffering. Oh, we've scored 4 goals in 10 minutes. Great. I remember that match quite fondly for the rest of the time. So it was kind of it's one of those things where I'm kind of like, well. Yeah, I had higher expectations than what was expected, but I probably didn't have as high expectations as others. And we'll probably get into my thoughts on Cristiano Ronaldo at the time of signing, which I kind of got carried away with, I've got to admit, which even against my better judgment that I had, because I actually had that judgment when I thought he was going to City, I was like, yeah, this, and this. Came to United, I was like, woohoo, 10-year-old me's crying inside because I get to see the guy that made me enjoy football when I was younger at my club again. And then, yeah. But yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah, I mean, just from the, you know, beginning of the season perspective, like even as someone who was not a fan of the Cristiano Ronaldo signing for various reasons, and then, you know, tactical fit ended up being one of them, I still thought he was going to be somebody who wouldn't hold the club back or anything. I didn't think that this was going to be a disaster waiting to happen on all fronts.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the idea. Like, obviously, I thought, I'd said obviously all the stuff about Juventus. I thought he was basically smashed into a Juventus team that, though probably was, it was still a fine Juventus team, and it probably could have done well if Pirlo had the team without Ronaldo. I think if you actually look at the team and some of the stuff they actually tried to pull off, but it wasn't the greatest Juventus team. But then there was problems there. But when he signed, I was kind of like, it was the conflicted, but then it was kind of like the child, as with everything, nostalgia wins out 9 times out of 10. And I was kind of just being like, well, you stick him in a team, everyone else does what they've done last season, we'll be fine. And of course, that did not happen at all. So, yeah, I think it was just a case of my expectations were here, and I might, my highest expectations were here, as you probably can't see on a podcast, I'm gesturing quite high, or like medium height. And my lowest expectations were here, which is kind of like, it might be hard, but we'll be okay. And somehow they managed to deliver so far down the pecking order that I don't know how to explain where to start with any of it.
Was there any part of you that sort of wanted to see what Ronaldo at City would look like? I think we're a little jaded on it because it happens in American sport all the time of players jump to your big rivals. And I think eventually you would just get over the fact that he wore a different shirt, and you wouldn't remember, when his career said and done, you'd probably never remember the City parts. You'd remember the United, the Real Madrid, even the Juventus. Maybe we won't remember the Juventus parts, but to see Ronaldo in a Pep Guardiola side and be like, huh, how's that going to work? Maybe that'll bring City back down to our level. Like, was there any part of you that wondered?
Yeah, I think now I've seen Ronaldo in a United shirt, I kind of have seen that might have been, in a way, a blessing in disguise, because you've probably talked in loads about how Pep Guardiola's personality is. He kind of likes to have people who are, he tells them what to do, they do it. And Ronaldo has been very much the opposite of that at United. And yeah, I feel like it would have been interesting. I feel like just being, if you could just get him to stay in the box, then City would probably have such an incredible sort of idea, and probably even in some ways, like, City's movement's a lot better than United's. So if he was drifting out wide like he tends to, someone would probably use that to their advantage, like a Cancelo or a Foden, to move inside and kind of use his movement against the other team. But in the same ways of, like, I as you said, on American sports, I'm a Miami Heat fan. I have benefited from probably the biggest one of, this guy's the best player in the sport, and he's just decided to up sticks and move and go to another place and do whatever he wants. So, and we're not going to name him here because we'll leave that to the imagination, even though you definitely know who I'm talking about.
I'm a Cavaliers fan, so I definitely know who you're talking about.
Yeah. He's talking about Ray Allen. Left the Celtics and then won a title with the Heat.
I'm there you obviously go. Talking about Ray Allen. Like, why would you think I was talking about anyone else? But that's the thing. Like, it's kind of one of those things where it would have hurt, probably, because I would have been like, if he'd worked out and I have to watch that City side do well anyway, it hurts me to watch it do well anyway, even if it's like a great side to watch. To watch it do well with Ronaldo when everyone was kind of like, well, like, we've made Ferguson cry because he's gone there. We've made all this sort of stuff happen. It's kind of like, well, okay, then that's just another stab in my heart while I'm watching City win the title again. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the ideal version of, oh, we'll get him to stay in the box and everything. The questions come when it's like, oh, that City team out of possession needs all 11 players hounding people. And Pep's teams require their striker to do a little bit more outside the box. And that's why we're hearing now a lot of people, I guess, just wondering about Erling Haaland and how he fits there. And I think we're making more of it than it is. I think he'll be successful because Pep's that good. Haaland's that good. They'll figure it out. he's young, he's impressionable, he's not as set in his ways as a 36-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo would be. Though there are very valid arguments there that I guess I'm just wishing them to be correct, even though I don't think they will be. Yeah. But I think those same questions would very much apply to Ronaldo, and would that work, especially given the personalities and the clash?
I think that would have been the main thing. It's like, how would Guardiola managing Cristiano Ronaldo work, especially at this stage of Ronaldo's career? Like, he is somebody who demands a lot out of players, to the point that a lot of players that join City, it almost seems like they disappear for a little while because they haven't quite bought in yet, or they haven't quite figured out what their role is under him yet.
Yeah, I think the thing with like the difference between Ronaldo and Haaland is, if Haaland doesn't work out, if Haaland turns out he's not like a City signing or anything, they'll sell him in two seasons for a profit after he scored 15 goals when they probably thought he should have scored 30. Like, the thing is that it's like the Ibrahimovic problem. Like, Ibrahimovic was very clearly a problem in the media. He was very clearly a problem for Pep. Everyone knew it. And yet when they sold him for whatever amount of money that I can't even remember exactly what it was, but it kind of like, it was non-negligible to Barcelona, and they spent it elsewhere. And they just got players in that were more willing to do what Pep wanted because they had a short list of, he's the best striker, he's the second best striker, that one don't work out, we'll come back for him in 2 years, he'll come to us because we're the biggest club in the world, ipso facto, we're fine, and it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I think the thing is like, it's probably Haaland's going to be a success. If not, if he adds 15 goals to that front line or in the season, it's 15, like, it, or a consistent 15 goals. It's more consistent than any of their striking options probably can do now. So, I mean, in that regard, it's just an upgrade. So, I can't really see where it goes wrong.
Casey, just as someone who's, you know, more plugged into the fan base than we are, and somebody whose work, you know, goes along with that, do you think that, I guess, one, the return of Ronaldo maybe made the fall worse in terms of the hype that was generated around the fan base and the excitement for this team? And then how has that fall, or the fallout from United dropping and in form and dropping down the league table, and the fan base kind of, you know, reacting negatively in whatever ways, how has that really compared to, you know, other falls in recent memory, like the Jose Mourinho one?
Yeah, I mean, I've only had a season ticket for a few years now. I kind of remember the end of Jose, which probably is one of the falls we're listing now. And it kind of was just, everyone was a bit bored. Now, the thing with Jose was, everyone was just a bit bored. And everyone was kind of like, yeah, he'll be gone. And that's just how United are. Like, it doesn't really, we'll get someone else in, it'll be fine. We got Solskjaer in, that was a big up. And then everyone was kind of like, oh yeah, okay, now we're good. We're giving Solskjaer a contract. Let's see where this goes. We'll back him to the hilt, which is kind of now what's happening with Ten Hag. We'll back him to the hilt. We'll be supportive no matter what, and see what happens. But this season's been something dreadful. Like, I sit in one of the stands, I'm not going to specify, not the Stretford end, but I say in one of the stands, because people make angry comments to me online. So I don't want to say where I'm entering into the stadium. But the thing is it's kind of been like, it got to the point that it got to Mourinho, where everyone was just kind of like, this is going to be over soon. And then it got past that because he didn't get sacked. Solskjaer didn't get sacked when we thought he was going to get sacked. We thought he was going to get sacked before the international break. And then it kind of went, everyone kind of had that international break of, he's not been sacked. Everyone kind of got riled up in their house, I think. And then it got to Watford and he got sacked. And then Ranić came in and we had the two games of Carrick and everyone was like, yeah, okay, we're really supportive. But everyone was kind of still a bit angry that we hadn't gone for Conte. We hadn't had got a plan. We were kind of just being... We were just trying to figure out what we were doing on the football pitch. But then we got Ranić, everyone thought, oh yeah, it's going to be a bounce. The bounce didn't happen. And I think the problem is because the bounce didn't happen, everyone just went from this kind of nice up to very, like, a lot further down from where they were. And obviously, the players got a lot of the brunt of it. I was sat in a game where, I mean, obviously, you've probably seen me on Twitter. I admit Maguire's had a bad season, but I've been trying to kind of mitigate it because I feel like it's got to a point where you're like, well, this is just ridiculous now. But yeah. I think I was at the Atletico Madrid game, and every single touch of the ball, no matter what he did, if it was right, if it was wrong, if it was just a simple pass, 5 yards, he was being complained at. He was saying, oh, 80 million paid for that. Why is he doing that? He's a terrible player, all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, he's not actually done anything wrong here. He's just made a pass to someone next to him. And like, oh, why has he not played it in for a striker? He's like, you see Rashford running there. I'm like,
because the striker was dropping all the way on top of Maguire. There was no striker to play into.
I'm like, this is ridiculous. And then obviously he went off and everyone was booing. And I'm like, I feel bad to be sat here because I just don't want to be. I'm already watching a terrible match. I'm already really annoyed at how the season's gone. I'm already being like forced to kind of watch players do this and that and that. And now I'm just like sat in a crowd of people just completely, just every second of the game complaining. And I'm there like, I just kind of, it's just that mood. And I understand it. I understand why people are annoyed. I understand why. And as a fan, like I said, as a fan myself, I understand why the mood got that way. But it was just, I think it just kept rolling and rolling. Like, it was like a snowball. So we started at the top of the hill and people were annoyed. And then it just kept going and going. And every bit of negativity fed into the next bigger negativity. And people couldn't go back because we weren't getting better. So it just kind of kept going. And then that final, I mean, obviously we had Brentford, I think, and that was kind of like, oh, it's a bit better. But that, what was the final game of the season? I'm kind of trying to remember now.
It went Brentford, Brighton, Crystal Palace.
So yeah, so Brentford was like, okay, fair enough, 3-0. And then you just saw the reaction online on social media after Brighton and Crystal Palace, and everyone was just like, oh, okay then. Everything we kind of was happy about with Brentford's just a lie then. And like, screw it and everything. I'm just...
As if we're finding out something new about this team that we didn't already know.
Yeah. I think it's hard to judge on this because the last two games... First, the Brentford match was, May 2nd. So it was almost a month ago. And the last two matches were away. So I don't think you were there. Like you said, I felt in the Mourinho years, this is going to be over soon and it's going to get better. That's once he's gone, it'll get better. This is a good, we've got some young up and coming players. We've got things to go. I never felt that like when we were at that point of the season this year, where it was like Solskjaer needs to go. And it was like, it's unquestionable. It's not a question. He needs to go, but I was like, what comes next? Because this squad is so flawed and what happens next has been a worry. Where would you say, because we know what the deal is, people online are, we could see that from our living rooms in America, being in Manchester, like, is there more optimism just amongst people on the streets of this will get turned around next year? There's a lot that needs to be done, but just a few moves will go a long way in making things better. We won't be competing yet, but making things better.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously the reasonable assumption is Ten Hag will turn it around a bit, we'll do better, we'll need to make some we'll need to make some transfers, and hopefully we'll start on back on the path. But I do feel like that sort of really negative online presence that we all know is there, and it all just kind of is in the background, and everyone's like, sack everyone, sign all the best players, none of them are fit to wear the shirt, so on and so forth, we should have never signed them, they're all like League 2, which they're not, because that would be impossible. Like, they have played Premier League football for quite a considerable amount of their career, or the highest level. That actually leached into people I was just talking to, like people I would talk to at the stadium, people I talked to outside the stadium, people I'd meet in the street. That had definitely leaked into like the actual real life aspect. Like when you're standing face to face with someone and they go, we need to sign 10 players, all these need to be sacked, I wouldn't care if we sent him to Shrewsbury, all this sort of stuff. And I'm there like, I know you're angry, but at the same time, I'm kind of a bit, I'm wondering, are your expectations, like the more the point of it is, are your expectations ever going to be met again? Because if that is your expectation for what needs to happen for this to turn around, if Ten Hag makes some signings, obviously we've spoke about it, Liverpool and City way ahead of everyone else. Chelsea getting a new owner probably will get a war chest because it's the owner's first season. They've got Tuchel, who's a great manager. They'll probably be up there. Tottenham now have a really good manager and apparently are now going to get backed, which is something that everyone's worried about for years because they were thinking Kane's not going to stay, Son's not going to stay. They have stayed. They're now getting the money to back them with a manager. They could be up there. I'm not even going to go into Arsenal. But there's four solid teams that are much better equipped, much further along, and much and in their projects, and much more set for next season. Now, if their expectation is we need to sell 10 players to be up there with them to even get top four, if we just get fifth and we find four players, what are they going to say then? Oh, we should have sacked all these. We should have done all this. I feel like this is the first season where I'm like, there's optimism for what comes forward, but there's also, there's a bigger distance to drop back. Because I feel like when Mourinho, as we just discussed, all the flak went on him. Everyone hated, by the end of it, everyone hated Mourinho in the stadium. Like, hated, I say in inverted commas, but everyone, Mourinho was the problem, is what most of the fans accepted. And when he left, everyone was behind the players again. What's happened, obviously, is Solskjaer's gone. Solskjaer got that flak. And what happened then was Rangnick came in. Rangnick couldn't turn it around. So the players started getting the flak. And those players now have to try and reset that next season. And I don't know if all of those players will be able to manage it.
You kind of touched on what my next question would be. Is it just there's so much anger and you touched on the expectations. Will your expectations ever be met? I go with, well, if your expectations were probably way too high to begin with, and if you're setting such high expectations, then you're right. They will never be met. But it just seems like everybody went to anger and nobody tried to understand. Like, everybody's so quick to be like, these players aren't fit to wear the shirt. And there's no like, well, you've got players that aren't getting the ball in situations where they could be their best. Or Bruno Fernandes is being terrible right now, but is it possible that maybe they're using him differently, or he's dropping deeper down on the pitch to get on the ball, and therefore he's not being able to create as much? And all the why of, why is this happening? Is anybody asking that, or is it just, no, they don't care?
I feel like there's obviously, the thing is that because of how it's happened, there's definitely been, and you've probably seen it yourselves, there's been fractures in the fan base. There's been people propping certain players up by putting other players down. There've been players, people trying to explain why people are having bad seasons, but also then going on to doing the exact opposite on another player. Because the thing is, it's become a war. That's the best way I can say it. We've ended up in a war. It's like the Republic has collapsed and now the Galactic Empire against the rebels, and everyone's at war with each other. Like, it's kind of like there's little factions and everyone has who they want as their captain, who they want as their star player, who they think should start in the defence, who they think should be the goalkeeper. All this sort of stuff. And people can just, and the problem is, if a normal person or a person from the outside or a person who's just trying to be that mediator can come in and say a completely fine opinion, they can try and explain this and that, and someone will take issue, and someone will take issue to the nth degree. And I feel like the problem is with social media is, you've got to have strong opinions to get heard. And that's some of the thing as well. You've got however many characters in a tweet. Not many people are probably prone to writing up six tweet threads on X, Y, and Z, why they think this player isn't doing as badly for X reasons. And kind of what's now happened is you've instead got people going like, Bruno Fernandes is good. Why do you all hate him? He was good last season. and Ronaldo is bad, and Ronaldo is not doing this, and Ronaldo is hurting Fernandez. And now you've got all your characters. And that tweet, then the other thing as well about social media is that tweet can be seen by anyone. And you could have just meant that to explain to your followers. You could have just meant that to just be like, I'm just saying my opinion out loud because I just want to say it. And that can get taken all over the internet. And obviously, that gets seen by one group of fans or one fan from one group of fans. That gets commented on, quote tweeted, whatever. And then all those fans start arguing because they all go to that, like, that tweet. And then that happens again because there's so many people saying that. Another fan comes in, another fan comes in. You should end up with a massive argument. And at the end of the day, I've always said, it's a game of football. I mean, I know we hold it dear to our hearts. I know we care what happens because we spend sometimes three hours a week, if not more, with build up and probably talking about it extra, thinking about football and kind of being very involved in football. But it's just the anger that some people feel. And of course, people spend a lot of money, people spend a lot of time on football. I understand it. The anger that it can go to has just gone to a new extreme. And obviously, I'm trying to be reasonable. I'm trying to say people, I know where some people are coming from, but like you sometimes, because obviously I'm sat on social media, I'm just making a tweet, I'm just stating a point, and you just get attacked personally. Like, no one's even cared what you've written at that point. And you're like, well, did this really need to happen? I mean, I'm fine with it. I don't mind. Like, at the end of the day, it's the internet. You can say whatever you want. Would you say it to my face? Probably not. But like, in general, I accept that that's just the rules of the internet. But at the same time, when it started, as I come back to my original point, now it started to kind of leak into, I'm speaking to you face to face and you're saying X, Y, and Z and getting visibly angrier and angrier in front of me. I feel like you just need to take a step back and be like, is this going to solve any of my problems? Because it's not. And at the end of the day, it was not going to solve any of your problems from November, probably even before November, whatever, when Solskjaer was sacked. It definitely is not going to solve any of your problems now. And it's not going to even start to get any sort of the solution until August. So people should just chill, is my general message.
What I took away from your analogy was, so there's a certain guy who sits behind a desk on YouTube and yells a lot. And he's like a Sith Lord. And then us, we've just been like the little kid in Last Jedi who force pulls the broom to himself, you know, with our little opinions, just trying to be like, hey guys, it's okay.
When
force pulls, Fred is good. So he just comes around, whacks the broom out of your hand and says, no.
When I go
we've got four or five good players to work with.
When I go to the bar now, like, everybody looks at me and they just go, like, if I have anything to say, people just look at me and go, see, Paul, your problem is that you still care. And I'm like, no, I really, really don't. And they're like, we follow you on Twitter. Like, you still care. And I'm like, I cannot emphasize how much, like, since November, I've just been watching this team as a comedy because it's the only way to get through the game without getting mad. If you watch it as a comedy, like, you'll laugh. It's funny. It objectively, my wife went into the shower a couple weeks ago. The score was 1-0 to Brighton. She came out of the shower and it was 4-0. And she's like, how did this happen? I know I took like a little bit of a longer shower. And I'm like, no. It all happened in 3 minutes anyway. Like, it's just funny.
That's a unique perspective that we all bring to the space, because myself, Colin, and Polly, we all root for some truly horrendous sports teams here in America. So we're like, you can't hurt me more than what the Jacksonville Jaguars have ever done to me. So, or the Washington Capitals. But
I don't even know who the Washington Capitals are. So that probably states out.
They just won a cup. Like, don't even bring them up.
That was an anomaly, bro.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Cleveland sports fan. As a kid, Manchester United was my source of, oh, this team I support is actually good. And now you have
nothing because of Cleveland Browns. And...
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a whole other conversation.
You guys brought in a Cristiano Ronaldo to quarterback, so.
Look, we came back from a 3-1 deficit to beat the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals. That's all I need for the rest of my life. I'm good with just – as long as we can get entertaining football and finish fourth place, I'll be fine. All right, so we are going to take Yes, Andrew Bellingham. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back and talk about who we think in the squad will play well under Erik ten Hag. So stay tuned.
All right, we're back and we're joined with Casey. And before, I know Colin teased Erik ten Hag, but before we get in there, let's actually talk a little bit about football, because this has been on for the last 2 days, certainly in my life, and I wanted to get your perspective of it. Irregardless of everything else, of all the other things and any problems that may have occurred, push comes to shove, end of the day, Cristiano Ronaldo, 18 goals this season. Did he have a good year?
Oh, right. This is gonna
be 18 goals in the league, 24, I think, in all comps, leading goal scorer by a mile for United.
This is my diplomatic answer. He had a good individual year. He didn't have a good year for the team, I think, is probably the way of putting it.
Who would be your team, your player of the season?
See, this is a hard question because I don't think anyone deserves it.
Right.
But I feel like if you're going to go off, if you're going off the back top, everyone in this team has had a negative trajectory in terms of their form and their capabilities. I'd say the one player that's kind of come out of it and I said he's a lot better than he probably was before this is Fred. Like, I feel like against the grain, I mean, obviously that's the hipster answer, and obviously it's
literally the piece that I wrote.
It's going to be between Ronaldo. We do this all the time, Polly. I say something and you're like, God damn it, I've just wrote this piece. Why have you put it on Twitter? But it's kind of, it's the hipster answer, yeah. But in terms of like, it's going to be one of Ronaldo or De Gea. That's the standard. But I don't think either had that great seasons for the team. And even De Gea said it in an interview, he thought he had a personally good season.
That was a joke. That had to be a joke.
That is questionable on many counts. But I think in terms of everyone else's reputation has kind of gone down. I think Fred has kind of come out of this with an increased reputation. Everyone's kind of thought they've gone from McFred is going to die and be buried with next to Solskjaer, and we're going to move into Ten Hag. And with a different midfield, Fred's kind of come out of it and been like, well, maybe I can be part of it for half the games or even more if we don't sign midfielders because this is United. So, yeah, personally, I'd say Fred on a sort of, as part of the team and helping the team, he has definitely developed. And I think, as you said, I think Ronaldo had a good individual year. I think something about how the goals were spread out. I think the point in the season where he didn't score for a few months really hurt our momentum. And it was kind of like our most important games in that spell in terms of the Champions League and also the league. And I can obviously take the argument that he scored 20 odd goals. How can you knock him when everyone else has played badly? But I feel like you've obviously got to take the diplomatic answer of where did those goals come? Did those goals actually matter in the grand scheme of things? Like at the end of the day, he scored.
Well, a lot of them did.
Yeah. I mean, like, a lot of them were game-winning goals. But, like, in the sort of, let me put it this way, and also in the Champions League. Yeah, in the Champions League, I'm not going to debate his season. He's probably our best player in the Champions League. He's probably one of the better players in the Champions League group stages. Not debating that. That's fine. He can do what he wants. But in terms of, like, we were trying to play one way. We couldn't play that anymore for the reasons that we've already discussed kind of in passing. I think he had a good individual year, but not a good year for the team, and therefore shouldn't be counted as the Manchester United player of the year.
Yeah, it's something that we discuss this with Manes in that podcast during the transfer window, right after Ronaldo signed, during the international break, where it came up of he used the example of Lukaku at Inter and Ronaldo at Juventus, Ronaldo scoring all those goals. Lukaku had the better team and he fit in the team better. And you look at the players that I liken it to Zlatan of you look at the players next to him, how they had good seasons the year prior comparatively because that Van Gaal team couldn't do anything. And then Zlatan comes in, Rashford, Martial forget how to score. Zlatan leaves. You bring in Lukaku as a different kind of striker, one that fits them better. And they suddenly start playing again and it's better team. And I think that's somewhere that's getting lost. And I think it, you did it in the first part of the show where you said we're adding on those Ronaldo goals. And you have to like, remember, we're not. Is Ronaldo is from a football perspective of why would you sign Cristiano Ronaldo? And you would sign a player like that because you would say, we are creating a lot of chances and we're not scoring as many goals as we should be from these chances, which would be bad analysis of what happened at United last year. They were actually scoring more than they should have. It was a chance creation issue, but you'd score them to say, all right, we need more goals from this position. You have to look at where the goals are cut. Like what's he replacing? And you had at center, at your striker last year, you had Cavani, you had Martial. That's 14 goals in the league, which is not a lot. I see why you would want more goals there. Rashford and Greenwood did score goals while playing center forward from time to time. But for argument's sake, let's just say 14. So Ronaldo comes in. He needs to replace those 14 right there and then add on some. He ultimately added on 4 while being a detriment to the others. And it's have you seen the show Winning Time?
Yeah, I've watched all of Winning Time. So yeah.
Yeah. So it's sort of like that the shot what people aren't understanding is you're not adding those Ronaldo goals with Marcus Rashford's 11 goals, or you say, well, Rashford scored 11 goals, but he was hurt. And if he's fully fit, we could expect him to conservatively add a few more and get to 15. Or Mason Greenwood had 7 goals after a 10 goal season. And if he keeps developing and you'll get what he did in the first 3 games, conservatively, we could get him to 12 or 13 goals. And then on top of that, you bring in Ronaldo, who you expect 20 goals. And it doesn't exactly work like that. If you watch Winning Time, and it's not in the first episode, it's like in the second or third episode when Jack McKinney meets the team and he shows them those clips of, here are you guys playing last year. Like, you just dump the ball into Kareem all the time and then stand around and watch. And Kareem scores 33 points a game. You score 100 points a game. We can be much better as a team if Kareem is scoring 25 points a game and the rest of you are scoring more. And this team became, and especially when Ragnik came in, he really doubled down on it. It became a, you're only going to get so many shots, and the distribution of Ronaldo's taking the bigger bulk of them, which means how is Mason Greenwood going to get the 13 goals that you're expecting of him? How is Marcus Rashford going to get the 11 to 15? They are getting fewer opportunities. And it's not just, if your striker's not playing that 1-2 back to them. It's if you're on the wing and you give the ball to Bruno and then make a run, Bruno's probably not passing back to you. Bruno's probably passing it to Ronaldo, because that's where all these chances are going. Like, you touched on the distribution of goals and everything. And his season just very much reminds me of Berbatov's 20 goal season, where like Berbatov had 20 goals. He won the Golden Boot. He was not surprisingly dropped from the Champions League final because he wasn't an important player. He didn't have a great season. He had a few great games. 11 of those 20 goals came in 3 games. And this is Ronaldo. 10 of his 18 came in 4 matches. I think there's so many people who, if you're not going to understand distributions and all that, like, we're never going to get to the point where you can create rational expectations of everything, because it all just comes from, we have Greenwood, we have Martial, we have Rashford, we have Bruno doing what they do. Now just add Ronaldo on top of that. For any striker, everything changes whenever you take one piece of the puzzle out and change it with a different piece, because there's no two pieces that are identical. And I think we really need to get to that point in our analysis. Like, of course, Ronaldo's going to win player of the year because our fan base just sees goals.
Goals go burr.
Goals go burr. Yeah, I feel like the explanation that I used, I think I've wrote a piece on this right at the start. And it was obviously in the Ronaldo back, Ronaldo everything sort of thing. And I was kind of, and I did use the phrase which is used in basketball, which is the black hole player, which I've watched the video. As Kyle Anka pointed out to me, I have watched the video on The Ringer about Kevin Durant. Don't worry. That's kind of where I got it from. And I also read it in quite a few in NBA. But when you watched him at Juventus, he obviously, and I, this is another point as well. When I watched him at Juventus, Dybala was coming off a 20-plus goal season in the league, and I think he scored 6 in the season that Ronaldo did. His shots went down. Ronaldo was taking 9 shots a game. I think Dybala's shots went down by about 4 a game, and he was taking them from worse areas because Dybala works the similar to Bruno, where he kind of thrives off the space the striker creates for him, which is something that I think has affected Bruno seriously, because obviously he likes Cavani because Cavani is very present in the box and people are drawn to him, and that gives him a lot of space outside the box and in the little pockets to kind of shoot and score. But something that also kind of pointed out is the thing with Ronaldo is it's not just that he takes more shots. He becomes the team. Like, you've seen it later in the season. He drops really far back. He goes to the wing. He demands ball. He creates overloads when it's not beneficial to have overloads. Like, at times we were having 3 or 4 players down the left wing with no one to cross into because Ronaldo would come out. Pogba would come to try and get the ball because no one was getting able to get forward. Tellez had pushed up, and then Sancho was kind of
and
just
then this goes them. To like, why are players underperforming? And it's like, well, you get that winger coming off, Ronaldo drops somewhere and you get someone running into the space, except now he's running to the end of a cross where he's dealing with a center back or two, as opposed to if you had a striker who was where he's used to a striker occupying those center backs and he's coming in on that back post where there's a weakness in the defense. Now he's the one guy that the defense is worried about. So obviously it's not going to end well.
Yeah. And it fundamentally even comes down to free kicks, because the fact is like, again, at Juventus, he took free kicks off Marijan Pjanic and he took free kicks off Dybala, both of which are statistically incredible free kick takers. Like, both of them had, in terms of percentages for free kicks, they were really good for percentages. But as soon as Ronaldo came in, he was just taking the free kicks. I think Pjanic in the time took 8 and scored 2, which was more than Ronaldo scored in however many he took. I think it was like 40 or something like that. And the fact is that it's just the other thing is that everyone always thinks that, well, would they have scored them anyway? It's not always about that, because the fact is that every free kick that becomes in a goal scoring area becomes a shot when Ronaldo takes it, and he doesn't score that many. He scored 1 this season and it wasn't really that good a free kick. He got nominated for the goal of the month. Cruel sort of saved it. I'm not having any of that. I watched that so many times over.
And everything that he does gets nominated for something because it's content and it's engagement.
Yeah.
And...
but that's the thing. Like, every single free kick in a goal scoring area becomes a shot. And if you notice last season, we were actually doing quite a few little flicks into the box. We were trying to flick it over the back line. We were trying to create space for people to head it in. We were trying to create space for, like, maybe Maguire to head it back across or Cavani to.
There's that Martial goal.
Yeah, exactly. So we were trying
to. If we're doing flicks and stuff and trying to get people to head it, like, Ronaldo would be a really good player to have in the box there.
Wait, yeah. Our best aerial player?
So, like, this is the thing. Like, but the thing is like, now you've created. I mean, I'm not going to say we're going to go score a free kick every game. I'm not saying, like, we have James Ward-Prowse, 6 free kicks across the season. That's 6 games he's influenced, if not 1, for Southampton just off a free kick. But if you get 1 or 2. In certain situations, in certain games, even if it just ends up being like 2 for the season, that's 2 games where you've scored an extra goal and you could change the result, and that could easily have made us a bit better in another area. And that's the thing, like, or you could have created a nice chance that might have been a scramble in the box, they scored. It's not directly from the free kick, but it's still created more of a issue. The thing is that, and obviously we're going to go into this, Ronaldo is going to be a player under Erik ten Hag. It's the issue of, how do you pick up a player who is the system when you have your own system that you want to apply? Because Ronaldo is the system. That's the thing. Like, the ball needs to get to Ronaldo. Ronaldo wants the ball. Ronaldo wants more on the ball. No one has ever told Ronaldo the phrase that you only get 2 minutes to influence a game, or what, however long I think it is. I've probably misquoted it. But you only get a few minutes to influence the game because he wants it all the time. He wants the ball to feet. He wants to be able to influence the game. He wants to take people on. He wants to have shots from distance. He wants to have shots in the box. He wants to be out wide trying to take on people. He wants to do everything because he likes football. He really likes football. And I don't blame him at all. But the fact is, at some point, you've got to go, look, this is not helping.
And the thing is, too, is, like, that's the kind of player he evolved into near the end of his Manchester United career. Was he had these teams that were so structured and so well you know, suited to play for him to play that kind of role up top, where, you know, he could play on the left wing, but, you know, just move wherever he wanted to in the attacking third and have full control over, you know, the offensive production and all the, these things that Real Madrid and Manchester United, those teams were so well reinforced in other areas that this team just isn't. And I think giving him that freedom has just been, like you said, with the free kicks, that's just like a microcosm of all these different areas of the game that his presence has overshadowed and in several senses has made worse.
And that's not the Knicks. That's not totally his fault either. It's his fault for being like, I want to get out of Juventus at any way possible. I'll go to Manchester United, even though it's not going to work. But you look at the rest of the players that are there, and it's not all Ronaldo's fault. Like, you can win with him. You need to be really good in the other 10 areas of the pitch, like 10 position players on the pitch. And United had very big holes there that were never going to be able to compensate for things and make it all work. You're, like he said, Ronaldo is the system, and the rest of the players don't fit that system. It's just a stylistic thing. And this is the fewest amount of goals we've scored since 2016-17, which is the last time that we had a striker who was the system. That the whole thing about that 2016-17 team is we thought it was better because we were coming off the most boring year we've ever seen. We scored like 40 goals under Louis van Gaal. We only scored 51 under Mourinho, but the frustrating part of that team was they were so much better than what they gave us. But you had a square peg in a round hole and Zlatan. You had Paul Pogba and Rashford and Martial and Carrick who could ping passes and like all and Lingard, and all these players were like begging to like play through the channels. But instead you have Zlatan dropping deep and like not really linking play, and everybody suffered and the team struggled. They won the Europa League. They struggled through that, but it was like that team was so good that it was never a question that they were going to win the Europa League. Like Mourinho put all of his eggs in the Europa League basket in February, and everybody was like, yeah, he should, because we're going to win that. So it's you put Ronaldo into this situation now where it's like, hey, the team doesn't really function in a system that is built around one person. It's not really that surprising that thus we didn't score goals, that the rest of the team weren't able to play up to their capabilities. But again, it comes down to nobody really asks the why. They just go, oh, they're not, they've down tools and they're not trying and they're not fit to wear the shirt. And that's a good way to bring us to the man who's going to have to address all this.
Yeah. So Casey, I guess we'll let you start off with players that we think are a good fit for Erik ten Hag in the current squad. Whether, I mean, we obviously don't know what kind of shape he's going to play with. We just have a general idea of what he looks for in his teams. So just, yeah, have at it.
broad question. Who do you think is a good fit? I think it's so hard to think about because I feel like I don't know what system he's going to play. And the kind of, I don't even know who we're really linked with. Like there's rumors and there's little reports.
That's a good thing. We're actually like keeping our business like quiet.
But this is the thing, like it's a good thing until it isn't. It's a good thing until we get to like the middle of whenever, maybe August. And we're like,
signed Donny van de Beek.
We have not signed anyone who makes sense yet. We've signed one centre back. And that kind of is worrying. And then it gets more worrying. And you're like, oh, they actually just didn't know who they were trying to sign. Because this target rejected us. And this target wanted Champions League. And this target wanted to go elsewhere because that's a better team. But I think in terms of, and this is going to be an interesting statement for the comments. I think in terms of a player that I think is pretty safe is Luke Shaw. I think I think me and Paulie have talked about this separately, but I think he's one of our best players going forward. But I also think he kind of has the versatility that he can play either side of what the fullbacks are for Ten Hag, because obviously one plays as a bit more of a for a deeper progressor, he kind of has that passing ability and he kind of can carry it forward to the halfway line and leave it and pass it on to people. But I obviously think that if we're going to play, the thing is a lot of what I think is going to happen with Luke Shaw depends on what's going to happen with Jadon Sancho, because Jadon Sancho is also a player I think that's going to, is obviously going to be a part of the system under Ten Hag. I think the thing with Luke Shaw is you've seen him play under different managers, and obviously this whole 6 months he's only been good for gets thrown around consistently, which is not true at all, because his things are result bias. I think the thing with fullbacks now is there's kind of been a results bias in the terms of if they get an assist, they're like, oh yeah, they did really well there. And they created the chance and they got the assist, but then they don't get an assist and no one remembers the good things they do. Because the fact is that we're like, oh, Trent's getting 12 to 15 assists a season. Robertson's getting 10. Cancelo's scoring 7 goals and doing all this sort of stuff. And everyone's like, well, Luke Shaw's got 3 assists. Not because the strikers weren't in the box or the striker didn't finish the chance or he made a really good chance and it just didn't end up in the net somehow. People are going, he's only got 6 assists. Sweet, right, fair enough. You're not looking at everything else he does. It's a bit like
how he's being asked to do different things.
Yeah, it's a bit how Pep described Grealish. Like Pep went, oh, he's not getting the goal assist. He went, well, he's doing what I want him to do. And the fact is, that's what thing Luke Shaw, for loads of different managers, has done exactly what they want to do. And the fact is that everyone who has played with Luke Shaw for an extended period of time has ended up looking better because he just seems to understand what other people want to do. He knew with Rashford, underlapping runs to allow either Rashford to pass it off or give Rashford space to dribble were the best ways for Rashford. For Sancho, he usually ran inside because it drew someone around and Sancho could either play it off to in the middle of the pitch outside the box, or he could do a little quick 1-2 with Shaw and then run inside and be inside on goal on his better foot. Like, the thing is he understands the game a lot better than Mourinho decided to fixate our fan base on, that he was like, oh, he's just running with my brain. He's not. He actually understands the game really well. The problem is he just needs to know what he just needs someone to go, right, he wants to do this. You need to do this. And then go, sweet, right, I'll do that. Because he just understands it and he does it really well. And I think that's something under Ten Hag that hopefully we'll get to see a lot more. Because obviously, as I said, he can either play deeper as a more progressive player or he can play further up as a sort of that fullback who roams upwards, just goes into the half spaces and kind of makes space for the winger to do what they need to do. And that's, I think, something that Jadon Sancho will definitely need going forward.
He's got great job security anyway, because Alex Telles is butt.
He's not good.
Great tactical analysis there, Paul.
Yeah, Alex Telles has one move. And the problem is that one move does not work at Manchester United. Because he basically gets it in the final third at the edge of it and hits a low cross, or he hits a cross across the front of the defense to try and score. The problem is United,
he doesn't even overlap.
He doesn't overlap. So basically, he just stops in his little crossing area and he waits for the ball to come back to him. No one runs into the box, and the problem is if anyone was running into the box, we play against low blocks, so there is no space in behind for him to play it to. So he just becomes a cut. And also, if you've watched the Portuguese league, just the amount of space that players are given on the ball is something ridiculous. Like, I've seen crosses he's put into the box, which would easily get headed away in a better league. But the problem is that they're just massive gaps between each defender. And
I remember when I did research on Bruno when we were about to sign him, and I found one of the goals he scored, and I like showed it. I think it was Brent, and Brent was just like, "Whose testimonial is this?" And I was like, "No, that's a league game."
Yeah. Oh my God.
Well, yeah, like I think, like obviously, Alex Telles, I don't think is safe. I think our right back spots are interesting. I think Dalot has more of a chance than Wan-Bissaka. I can understand where Wan-Bissaka would be good. I'm at that point where I'm like, in a team that plays a low block, you just need someone to carry it out at the right back spot, right from the right back spot, and then hand it off to better, more talented players. He's probably a perfect fit for that sort of team in a low block. But in this team, where you want possession and you want someone who can distribute very, very well from the back, it's not going to work out for him. And I think he should move on to go somewhere else. And I'm going to let you talk about centre backs, because I feel like I've already had enough today of trying to talk about centre backs.
Well, no, you touched on something that is important. Like when you're talking about Luke Shaw, and it was about how You look at anybody who's playing with Luke Shaw for an extended period of time, somehow, we know how, seems to come out looking brighter. And in this individual era, game, whatever, that seems to, and this is relevant to midfielders and Ronaldo and everybody else. And we only seem to judge them on what are you doing? And this is also like, I wrote a piece about this a couple of weeks ago of like, about how, what the stats are showing, like, cause the stats count what you do. You're carrying it into the final third. You're passing it into the box, but what happens next? And it's like how we judge players we should factor in. Are you making your teammates better? Like during two seasons ago, it was like Nemanja Matic, like statistically wasn't doing much, but when he played, we conceded a lot less. We conceded a lot and we scored a lot more. Like other players were playing well. And I was like, what is he doing? And it's like, well, the positions he takes up, the space allows Pogba to move more freely and get forward and do things that influence the game more. And I think we need to look at a lot of players in that regard. So like Luke Shaw is one of them. Of what he does enables other players. Like Jadon Sancho very much struggled, especially with Alex Telles not providing any overlap for him. I think Jack Grealish struggled because City didn't have an overlapping left back for them. It's all these little things that you do this that enables Anthony Martial create space for other strikers. He's one of the better facilitators from the top of the box. He doesn't score as much, but he enables the team to score more. All these different ways of looking at players and being like, okay, you may not get the goals or the assists, but you're making the team better by being there. And I think that's...
And something that he does...
That ties into one of the center backs pretty well.
Yeah. I know who we're talking about, but just before we move on to that, I mean, Luke Shaw is somebody who did that over the course of basically... I mean, what was it? He came back fully healthy for Project Restart from then until sometime this season for
he
both
was good.
Club
he
and
was
England.
Good
like he was
when
just
he came back in like February, but everybody was trying to be like, oh, it's because he's playing as a center back in a back three. And I was like, he's actually just good.
Yeah. Somebody who can just consistently perform at that level and consistently do those things, even when other teams are aware of what you're trying to do. Really vital and fits the kind of like fullback profile that I think Ten Hag is looking for.
Yeah, I think the thing is that there's a. I wrote an entire piece on my Medium, which I'm going to prop, which is about Drogba, and it was kind of about Drogba's role in that Chelsea team. But it was about him in big games, but I kind of touched on when he was not in big games and how he just operated. We didn't score a lot of goals, but him being there meant everyone else scored a lot more goals because he just occupied entire defences. And I think the problem with United is we have such rose-tinted glasses of the Ferguson era that even the players that we considered water carriers, so maybe, let's say, Jason Park's an incredibly talented player, but he was there to make other people better because he just was just so present on the pitch. Like Michael Carrick was there to because he was safe in possession and he passed it out. Michael Carrick, we've like raised them up to individual status of being these amazing players. And the fact is like, yeah, they were incredibly good at their jobs, but they were just there to do a job so your individual players could do these great things. And I think the problem is now we're looking at our team and like everyone needs to be individualistic, everyone needs to do great things. And we're just looking at it, well, no, if you look at Liverpool, you look at City, you look at Chelsea, there are so many players on the pitch that you probably go, he's not scored a lot, he's not assisted a lot, but I think he's pretty good because Chelsea fans seem to like him. He plays every game and they play pretty well. But then when they look at United, they're like, he's rubbish because he doesn't score an assist and he doesn't do this. And it's like, well, that's the thing. That's what a water carrier is. It's a guy that's there because he allows your best players, the ones that you're meant to hold on this pedestal, allows them to do better. And that's the thing that we just kind of have just taken it at the fact of everyone needs to be this individually amazing player because we have just raised the water carriers that were in past teams to the sort of status where we think they were just individually amazing. Partly because some of the best ones fell into, like Carrick, one of the best ones, fell into this era of us being bad. So he just looked technically amazing.
I think the best example of this is, you look at France. They went to the last World Cup and they started the team that you would expect them to be like, They have Griezmann. You put him on one wing. They have Ousmane Dembele. He's a great winger. You have Mbappe. He could play centrally as a striker. 4-3-3, go, run over teams. They played one game like that, and it was like, oh, this wasn't really working. I think they won like 1-0 on a penalty. And then they bring in Olivier Giroud, who goes through the entire tournament without scoring, but France are much better. And it's because Giroud is just making room for Mbappe and for Griezmann. And when Giroud's finally got phased out of the team, they bring back Karim Benzema, who you can play Karim Benzema as an out-and-out number nine goal scorer, but Karim Benzema also has an entire career of creating space for Cristiano Ronaldo. He's very good at creating space for other players. So you don't need to use him in that way. It's just that's his skill set. And interestingly enough, Anthony Martial never really regained form after the 2020 season. And yet he's been more involved in the France setup recently. And it's why, because like for like, he's the most, he does that job of like, all right, you're not going to put in Anthony Martial to lead the line and be like, score all the goals for France. But he's very good at occupying players and creating space for the Mbappes and the Griezmanns, that if Karim Benzema is hurt and you need a backup, like he has that profile. And it's like Bobby Firmino at Liverpool. You don't judge him on goals, but he's doing a hell of a job of creating space for Salah and Mane. And then, as Casey said, you come back to United and it's Martial, who, by the way, in 2020 scored at a higher pace than Ronaldo did this season. And yet that season, it was Martial not good enough. This season, it's how could you consider not bringing back Ronaldo? It's because we're just so fixated on the goals, the assists, and that's it, as opposed to looking at all the other things you could do for a team.
Paul, are you leading into, are you getting into maybe Anthony Martial is a good fit for Eric Ten Hag?
Dude, this is my take. I'm so excited.
You want to make the take, Nathan?
You got 6 minutes and 30 seconds.
Remember, I posted in the Slack. I said, you know, what are the chances that Martial has kind of a resurgence under Ten Hag, simply because we saw Sebastian Haller leave West Ham, go to Ajax, and he has a career year under Ten Hag. And I think Martial is a better player than Sebastian Haller is. And so Martial got to go soak up the sun while United were just absolute shit. And I know he didn't do a whole lot in Sevilla either, but at least the weather was nicer. Yeah. And so this is my heart speaking more than my brain, but I'm the vibes guy on the podcast. So that's what I'm going with. He was my first shirt. So I'm the number one card carrying member of Glove Season Twitter, and I think Martial's coming back.
But I don't mean to put you out on blast, but are Martial and Sebastian Haller similar players?
They're both French.
Well, one's converted to Ivory Coast, so you've kind of lost that one.
I happen to think his skill set would be useful for Ten Hag. I thought his skill set would have been very useful this year, and there's a reason that Carrick started him against Villarreal next to Ronaldo and more central than Ronaldo, and then they swapped, and then he became useless. We saw it in the second half against Watford of he's the guy that'll create space for Ronaldo. And I think Ragnick wanted him to stay, but at that point he was very convinced on leaving. And there's a reason that even a day before he left, Ragnick brought him onto the pitch when needing a goal to beat West Ham. I think he would be a good player under Erik ten Hag. I just don't think he has any desire to be here anymore. The injury record is a concern. He has been injured for like 3 years now, but I just don't think that he has any desire to be here, that it would be an untenable situation.
Yeah. It's like once bitten, twice shy. Martial's been bitten about five times. He played well under Van Gaal. Rashford came in, he moved away for Rashford, but they formed a good partnership and it was fine. But then Ibrahimovic came in and he was like, well, sweet, now I'm not playing there, I'm playing out on the wing and occasionally swapping with Rashford, and now we're in a competition when we're actually working well together as best chums. And then it was like, okay, sweet, you're playing well, Martial. Here's Alexis Sanchez. Have fun with that one, because he's definitely not playing. He's definitely not being dropped. And Martial was like, sweet, nice one. I can deal with that.
That cost him a World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. And then we've just constantly gone, even Martial playing well, like we brought in Lukaku, with Martial playing well, we brought in Ronaldo, we brought in Cavani. We've basically just been like, every time he does well, or every time he looks like he's trying to find back form, we've just gone, here's another roadblock in your way, Martial, but we might need you. So hang around. We'll call you. We'll give
you a text. We're going to play you at striker, bulk up. Oh, now let's just put you back on the wing, where now you've lost your quickness, but we're going to throw you out there anyway.
Stay away from Lamella.
Nathan, yes. Why don't you go next with a player from the current squad who you think will be a good fit under Eric Ten Hag, who is not Anthony Martial, because he's not with the current squad currently.
Well, besides the ones that we've talked about, because obviously like Sancho is an easy layup question simply because of price, they're going to figure that one out just because he's so brand new. And it was a really weird first year for him. You know, we talked on the last podcast, I think I was pretty adamant that I think Fred has a real shot of being important for the team. We know he's got some passing deficiencies, but I feel like this year he was a little bit more up for playing forward, scored a few goals, and just all around, he's really good at being a pest. And I think especially because Ten Hag, we're going to go through a transition period. Like Ten Hag is not going to have, you know, the preferred team in year one. This is a rebuild that's several years, you know, down the road that we've got to work on, because, you know, we keep talking about rebuilds on this podcast. So I think definitely as like a bridge player, he's going to be really important because he does a lot of that water carrying work that we've talked about. And when he's paired up with a competent midfielder, he does a pretty good job.
I was going to say we've had this conversation with Pogba so much about, you know, if we get a proper holding midfielder in that, you know, that can do the job that we have both McFred on to do, you know, we'll really unlock this midfield or whatever. But like,
yeah,
that's kind of the case with Fred, where like he is a midfielder who would obviously prefer being, you know, further up the pitch and doing more Fred things than doing kind of the dirty work that he's had to do for the last couple of seasons, which he has expanded his game, I think. And, you know, he's been good at it, but I think Fred would prefer to be further up the pitch in the final third.
Yeah. I mean, we've always said that we need to just put Fred on McTominay's shoulders and put a trench coat around him and then put another midfielder in there, because I don't know like what exactly was going on, but maybe it's, you know, it's like in everything everywhere all at once, where Fred just starts pulling on McTominay's hair and they start figuring it out.
I like how you reference everything everywhere all at once when that was also just referencing Ratatouille. Like, yeah. much more relevant reference. But
welcome to Nathan.
Yeah. This wasn't a spoiler for a recent film that you could have used, but you went, no, we'll go for that one.
I like that one better, if we're being honest. No shots at Ratatouille, which is a fine film.
Do you have Ratatouille on DVD, on your wall of DVDs?
I don't have Ratatouille. I mean, I don't.
Better add that.
I don't feel compelled to like buy anything that's owned by Disney anymore, now that Disney Plus is a thing. But for your information, Casey, I had sent a picture in our group chat. I'm still somebody who purchases physical media sometimes, so. I have a small library in my living room.
Fair enough. I respect your decision making.
It's going to make moving next month a pain in the ass, but you know.
So Fred.
Yeah, I like Fred. Big fan of Fred. Big fan of Paulie's Fred Zebra jersey. I want to run it back at least one more year. I like Fred.
Don't worry, he ain't going anywhere.
Nope.
This is an interesting one too, because I think Fred's contract runs up. I think he has a one-year extension after this next season, but he's also at an age where,
based on the way we do contracts, I'd say there's like a 99% chance he has a one-year option.
Yeah.
Oh, and yeah, speaking of contracts,
it's a 2023 with a one-year option. I just used the Google in front of me.
So when do you think they trigger the 1-year option? October, March?
It will be after he scores a goal against Leeds in our 6-1 rout of Jesse Marsh's Leeds. That puts Marsh on the
You're high like seat. Hollywood. You're going back to old scripts and just rewriting them.
Yeah. I'm taking my favorite things from movies and then putting them in my movie, like Everything Everywhere All at Once did with Ratatouille.
Or like every director does in movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm proud of myself for knowing Fred's contract just off the top of my head. But yeah, he's a midfielder who checks some boxes, and we definitely will need that going forward. So moving on to the player that we hinted at earlier, I'm going to say Harry Maguire because, you know, I'm a hipster and everyone hates him right now.
I'm glad you said Harry Maguire because I did not want to have to be the one to say Harry Maguire.
I've had arguments with people today already over Harry Maguire. I'm quite glad you've already said this.
We put enough targets on Casey's back for this podcast.
Ten Hag is a guy who likes to, what does he like to do? He likes defenders that play the ball forward and can make press passes and
contribute in possession.
It's not just that Harry Maguire is good at that. It's that he's the only center back we have that can do that.
Right.
And also, one of Harry Maguire's defining traits.
Yeah, and if we're sticking with De Gea for a season, you need someone who can actually do that in front of him. Who will actually maybe pass two for once instead of booing into the crowd and then complaining that Maguire hasn't moved into space for him when he definitely has. I.e. the Norwich clip that some people should probably go and Google right now.
How far away are we from going back to like youth football where it's Harry Maguire actually taking the goal kick?
Well, now they play him short. It's just he gives them to Harry Maguire, and then Maguire has nowhere to go with it.
If De Gea is that glued to his line, he might actually get dropped by Erik ten Hag.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is like, obviously, I'll come back to Maguire, and I'll do my little defense of him, and have a little chat with him, and give him a hug through the microphone. But the thing is with De Gea is, I am happy to let him have a chance in the sense of I feel like you can't completely isolate out someone like David De Gea because he's the longest standing member of the squad who is actually still part of the squad if we don't say Phil Jones. He's quite well respected in the squad. He's obviously, he has a voice in the squad. So it kind of is like, And he has been captain before. That's another thing. He was captain before Maguire. So you can't just go. Like, I feel like with Joe Hart, when Pep came in, everything had been laid in the groundwork to go, Pep is the one true voice of this squad. If you don't agree with it, tough luck. He's going to be here a long time. You can see by everything that we've put in place for him to be here. Ten Hag is, by all accounts, obviously we've picked him up in the media, we've picked him up in everything, but all accounts, he's just another manager. He's the sixth in however many years since Ferguson, 9, 10 now. Like, you can't, if the players have already seen that if they say, I don't really want to do it, eventually it might just go bad for the manager. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to say a player's going to deliberately sabotage, but the problem is that the players is, and obviously that is definitely not what I'm saying.
I don't like that. That gives credence to like the narrative of, oh, these players quit on Solskjaer and Ragnick the way that they've quit on everybody. And it's like the players that quit on Jose Mourinho, very much not the ones that are still here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I'm not saying it like that, but I mean, in terms of the sense of De Gea is very set in his ways. He's been very set in the ways
since the beginning.
Under Van Gaal, they got a coach specifically to try and get him out of those ways. He didn't do it. And also there was a small period when he did do it, but when it started going wrong for Van Gaal, he kind of just went, okay, he didn't do it. Like, the thing is like, he didn't then do it. He did it for a small period. Things started going wrong for Van Gaal. Part of it was because he couldn't do the role under an intense amount of pressure. And then part of it was because everyone just decided we don't like playing this style of football. And the fans that's the thing. The fans do leak into the players in that regard. If everyone in the stadium's going, this is really boring, and go attack, 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 it does kind of leak into the players, I think, because you kind of see it. Like, I think the biggest proprietor of that is, if a fan goes shoot, the amount of times the player just shoots for no reason is insane. I don't get why they do it. I don't get why anyone would do it. But at Old Trafford, especially under Ranić this season, anytime anyone's gone shoot, they've gone, okay. And I'm like, well, that's not good because now we've just wasted a chance. But I do think the fans in that sort of way do leak into the players. But I feel like you can't drop someone like De Gea because of his influence within the squad. And I'm happy to see him given a small chance at the start of the season to try and play the way of football. I do just hope if we're selling Dean Henderson, which seems to be the case from multiple reports, that we do get someone in who can do the role, even if it's...
Not Tom Heaton.
Even if it's Pasveer. Like, even if we go to Ajax and say, here's 300k for Pasveer, because we know he can play the football that he needs to do for a season, that's fine, because I just need someone there who can go, this is how we need to play. And the thing is that the big thing about the defence is they need to know that behind them, long-term, is a player that knows how to play the way that Ten Hag wants to play. So the players that are going to be there past the ones that are going to leave know how the rest of the team is meant to play and can get used to that in the season instead of going, seeing De Gea, he's not going to do anything of the passing. He's not going to do any of the coming off his line. He's not going to do all this sort of stuff. He's not going to do the claiming of crosses. Next season, you'll have someone who does that and you'll have to learn to play around him. Sweet.
Right. Do you think that Ten Hag will have the stones, for lack of a better word, if it is November and he does have a goal? I feel like this could be like a Tim Howard, Roy Carroll situation, where not so much where Ferguson just got mad at Tim Howard, but like essentially got mad at Howard and went with Roy Carroll, who wasn't really good to begin with. But like, if you do go in and bring in a keeper who isn't really great, but like can play that style, that like by November, he would actually say, okay, this isn't working. You haven't adapted. I can't keep playing with you. You would have thought like Ragnick would have done it. People were talking about, and then just turns out that Ragnick had no idea what he was doing and is an MLS coach is guiding him and a guy in Russia is, you know, giving him instructions. Ten Hag seems to have more of an idea of what's going on and how football works. Like, would he actually have the wherewithal or the stones to go and do it?
I would hope so, because the fact is, like, Ten Hag is hopefully going to be there for 3, 4, 5 years, however long he ends up being here. If he signs an extension, we don't know, but whatever the length of his contract, he's probably hoping to fulfill that at least. And I think the thing with Ranić was, it became very clear very quickly. The players were very aware that he was just the interim. Like, they were going to continue. You saw it from 45 minutes for Crystal Palace. They played his way of football, didn't get a goal. And then that next 45 minutes, they just played the exact same way they'd been playing beforehand. And there was not even like an inkling of any style of football that had come across from before. Maybe that was a fact of what we already discussed, that Ranić hadn't coached them in situations of the game and later into the game when they had the fitness, how to manage the fitness to press less and still be as effective.
He never instilled anything.
That's what I mean. Like,
for 2.5 years, all we heard about was patterns of play. And this team has no patterns of play. And then when Ragnar came in, we heard, oh, they're getting a real coach and they'll be coached. And I remember Twitter on that during that Crystal Palace game, just being like, oh, I really just want to see Paul Pogba in this team. Like, this team is so much better coached already. And there was never at any point of the last 6 months, any patterns of play. The patterns of play group just happened to shut up and they quickly switched the blame onto the players who were, if they weren't good for Ragnick, maybe they weren't exactly the best players under the last guy. That's really my question is, Ragnick didn't seem to know how to get the best result. You're not going to get the best out of all these players. The players don't match well together. He never seemed to figure out how to get results out of them. He never seemed to have a plan. And that became apparent in January during that run of games where we would go 1-0 up, we'd concede a goal, or we would never go 1-0 up. And with 65 minutes gone by, 25 minutes to go, our heads sort of dropped. Bruno and Pogba would start playing hero ball because it showed that they never believed in the plan. They like didn't know what to do. Whereas opposed to last season, they went down all the time or they needed late goals all the time. And they never dropped their heads. They were always like, if we keep playing our game, the chances are going to come. We're going to score. This season, as soon as they hit a roadblock, it was like, well, this guy doesn't know how to fix it. If Eric Ten Hag comes in and he wants to play a certain way, and David De Gea isn't coming off his line, that prohibits him from playing a certain way, and he doesn't get the midfield that he needs, and they're not protecting the style of play that he wants to play, isn't protecting your back line. Do you think he's pragmatic enough to be like, all right, I need to put my style on hold for a year and figure out a way to get results with this group of players?
Yeah, it's a hard question, because I feel like if you do that, it's the same as this year, where it's a year wasted in terms of, I feel like Ranić obviously had an idea of the way he wanted to play on day one, and he wanted to get the coaches in that he wanted to get in through Brexit and other sort of restrictions. He wasn't able to get those coaches in, especially I think Lars Konecka, the one that he was video calling constantly, was meant to be there with him and couldn't get the work permit, and that's why he took up an extra role at Lokomotiv. I think he also said he wanted to get another coach in, and you saw that he wanted to try and get his style across. And then I feel like there was a point where he went, okay, I'll try and get some sort of style of what Ten Hag would like across, because I feel like in some ways it's very hard to see, because it never worked. And it never kind of showed that way. But when Dalot stays back and kind of progresses a bit more and then slowly edges up the pitch, we play with a single six, we play with one player going forward, play with one player who's more of a carrier, so on and so forth. There are like little tidbits that this is kind of like setting up for the next manager. As I've already said, I don't think he had the authority in the dressing room to say, okay, I want you to play this way of style of football, because at the end of the day, it wasn't going to be the style of football that they played long-term, and it wasn't the style of football that was going to win them anything, especially past them going out of the Champions League, especially past dropping so far behind in the league. Maybe not even like where it looked like it was kind of unlikely, if we didn't really pick our form up, that we would get the Premier League. It kind of just didn't look like we were going to get there, because obviously Tottenham were playing much better than us. Arsenal had a really good run of form, so on and so forth. But the thing with Ten Hag is, I feel like you compromise for a year to get results and to get the results, to get the Champions League. And I'd hope personally that he wouldn't do that as a fan, because I feel like if you do that, you're putting it on hold for a year and you're kind of saying, for a year, we're just going to try and do this. And sometimes that is the pragmatic approach. That is the kind of thing that you need to do to make sure you get where you need to go to do the next stage of the plan. But I feel like there's so much that needs to be instilled in this squad. And this squad is kind of getting to the point of, if you get a certain amount of players in and do all this sort of stuff, it's just going to be a blank canvas anyway. That to go for a season, we're going to just go and accommodate those few players who might not even be here past this season, might be problematic in the long term. But then again, I feel
the flip
like
the side of that though, yeah, is if you stick to your guns and say like, we're going to implement this style, because ultimately that's long-term better. But if that means we finish sixth again, when you have a shot at finishing in the Champions League, and you look at the message it sends to the players, don't necessarily know whether it's, we're sticking to this style because long-term, I think it's going to be better, or we're sticking to this style because this is the way I know how to coach, and this is the style that I know how to coach, and I don't know how to do anything else. And if you're in a situation where things need to happen, that midfielder needs to move the ball in this way to efficiently move, and the players are just watching that midfielder not be able to make that play. So then it becomes a, why should I make this run? Because whenever he gets the ball, it's not going to come here. And why are we still doing this week after week after week, when it's obvious this midfielder cannot get the job done in this style? And if we want to win, we can't be asking him to do that, or we can't be asking that winger to play in that way. And eventually, does that make you lose faith? And why is the manager not seeing this and adjusting? Because we have a shot at getting in the Champions League, because maybe for the club, it is better long-term, but these players don't want to spend another year outside the Champions League.
Yeah, I understand that as well. Again, like, it's kind of the weighing up the pros and cons of it. I just feel like every manager that's ever, or like since Ferguson, every manager that's kind of tried to compromise has kind of, that's where they've come and done. Or they kind of like defaulted to one thing, hoping it would work. And that went wrong. Moyes, it was just cross it a lot, which I didn't get at that point. But like Van Gaal was, okay, I can't play my free-flowing counter-attacking football. We'll just pass it around the back and hope that we can hold possession until we can find the single gap that works. And they kind of went back to this one little thing that they understood, because obviously we picked managers that have a very defined style of play. I think it's been a kind of a similar thing. Mourinho was probably the one who maybe had the most expansive, but the problem with Mourinho is, and it's been a problem for his entire career, is as soon as something goes wrong, Mourinho is very classically a manager who overcorrects. I think there's been many situations throughout his career where something has gone wrong, and instead of understanding that that is just a variance in football and it maybe is a chance that just happens, he's just gone, okay, I'm going to put this player here so that never happens again. And it was like, well, it might have never happened again anyway.
Right. The losses to like Brighton and the Huddersfield loss really shook him.
Yeah,
Jose Mourinho walks in the office and sees that something's on fire, and he drops his cigarette in the trash can and walks out.
He's like, okay, the photocopier's on fire. He's like, we will have no more photocopier. It's like, but we need the photocopier to do stuff. It's like, no, the photocopier could catch fire. We're not going to have the photocopier anymore. It's like, well, no, Jose, you need the photocopier. You can't just not do this anymore, because that works. That works 99 times out of 100. You just happen to stumble across the one time when it didn't. Don't completely throw everything out the window to do that. And I feel like, obviously, Ten Hag has a very similar style of play. Like, I've only seen the Ajax team. I've seen a couple of clips of his Utrecht team, which is kind of a bit of a similar style, but it was kind of like formative in that regard. And he might have different styles of play. He might have more stuff in his locker. He might be able to implement it in different formations. But I feel like, in the back end of the Ajax season that's just gone, we've seen that when he tries to do different formations and he tries different things to try and get other people into the game because he's trying to solve with injuries, it doesn't particularly work out. Because that Ajax team went from being incredibly dominant to, yeah, having a lot of injuries, but playing 4-2-2-2 and looking completely lost, because they just were like, well, this doesn't work. And maybe that's because he spent so many years formulating a plan, and they've just now suddenly gone against that plan. But I feel like he has a very definitive way of how he wants to play. And my hope is he can find a way that fits the players that we have. And I'm hoping it works out well. This is all optimism. This is the thing. Like, I want to...
Ironically, it's the one manager he doesn't mention who like was very pragmatic and basically looked at the team and said, we can't play the way my ideal version of this team is. So I'm just going to figure out ways to get results out of that, whether it's sticking Juan Mata on the right wing or constantly using McFred, who everybody hated. And then it was like, oh, there's a reason that he does that. Pogba can't play midfield. Donny van de Beek is pretty terrible. Nemanja Matic can't move. It's like, oh, he is literally doing everything he possibly can to just eck out results here. And like they did not ever play the way he described how he wanted Manchester United to play, but he got the most results out of anybody, in terms of league position.
Yeah, I think obviously I didn't mention Solskjaer because I was trying to think in my head the way to put it, but I feel like the thing with Solskjaer was he's the example that you're kind of stating. Obviously, he did the pragmatic stuff and he made a way that worked and it did well for him. But then he signed Ronaldo, he signed Sancho, he signed Varane, and he needed to then smash them into that style of play. And it just was the one step too far. It was the straw that broke the camel's back.
He pushed it off for a year, then had to push. He couldn't establish his idealized version because, frankly, you're using McTominay, Fred in midfield with Andreas Pereira as your number 10. Bruno helped with that. And then you add Pogba and Matic, and suddenly they looked good. But then Matic couldn't play for it.
They never found the next Matic. They just... Right.
And the next year they didn't get the player. So it was like they didn't get the player. So he pushed it off again. And by then, that's the risk you take, is when does the patience run out if you're Ten Hag? And it's as Casey said, like you lose a year, and that could be the problem. And also because with this board, you can never trust them to bring in the right players. And that suddenly you push it off a year, you don't get the right players, and suddenly you're back to oh, okay, I still can't do what I want to do. How now with this team do I?
Yeah, I wonder what, like, I mean, there's been all the stuff about John Murtaugh and how he wants to be different from Ed Woodward, and he's aware of, you know, the impact he has to make in that role. I just worry about how he can affect the ambitions of the board, because it almost seems like when we do get to that point where everything seems like, you know, they're kind of on the up or things are going to be okay, that's when the board is like, okay, well, you've got what you need. And yeah, we end up with a transfer window of stagnation, and the squad doesn't improve in multiple ways to evolve into what the fans want, as opposed to being a team that can consistently achieve top four, bring in Champions League money, and keep the fans happy enough.
Yeah, because I mean, in some regards, the sword of Damocles hanging over any manager at the moment is Ronaldo technically has an option to extend for a further year. I'm pretty sure. I mean to double check that.
He does. I don't know who the option is, but it's a 2+1.
There is a 2+1 option. So the fact is, like, let me put it this way. If we say we're going to make the team around Ronaldo for one season, hopefully get the Champions League, and then he's off and Ten Hag can implement his style of play. Sweet. Fair enough. What if he extends for another year? Then Ten Hag's now got another year of a player that doesn't really fit his style of play, doesn't particularly fit how he wants to play, how he wants to do this. He then needs to put it off for another year. And the thing is that I feel like he needs to start off on the right foot. We've done all the talking. Richard Arnold's done all the talking. John Murtaugh's done all the talking. The club's done all the talking that this is Ten Hag's team. Ten Hag can play with it the way he wants. He can build it the way he wants. I mean, obviously, there's going to be some degrees to which that is allowed, and there's going to be some degrees to how much that is just us, the club, talking. But I do want to kind of believe that to some degree they've gone, the manager is the manager. The manager knows how this team wants to play, and we're going to try and our best within reason to facilitate that. I mean, it's not going to be like if he goes rip up Ronaldo's contracts, they're going to go, probably not, because that would be expensive. So we're not going to do that. Try and figure it out. And at the end of the day, if you don't figure it out at the end of the season, he could be gone. Because I think if you don't play him, he's going to probably leave. Like, the thing is that there'll be a club somewhere that will be like, a year of Ronaldo, marketing, whatever, it'll be fine.
How much of this do you think has to do with how much do you think we overrate our academy players? Because I think there's a big issue there, in that a manager can come in and bring in players that fit his style. Not that saying that that happens at United or didn't under the old regime, but at any club. But the players that you supplement them from the academy with, that's, you're getting what you get there. They don't necessarily fit the style that you're getting. Like at Ajax, Ten Hag knows that it's next man up. Like the right wing in the academy is going to play exactly the way that the right wing in the first team is going to play. But you've got all these pieces from the academy that this club loves to talk, to speak up of, oh, we're grounded, and we have so many players that come through into the first team that don't necessarily fit. Of Scott McTominay cannot play possession football. Marcus Rashford is very good on the counterattack, and he's not as good in other areas. And Jesse Lingard is very similar. He's very good in a Mourinho or David Moyes style team, and not so good in a ball dominant team where he needs to be proactive on the ball. But all these players who have shown flashes, and the word potential gets thrown out so often, and it's so, at a certain point, the club, and this is where the board needs to come in, or not the board, but Murtaugh and Fletcher to the board, and being like, this is how we want to play. And we have these academy players who have potential for whatever, but they do not fit the system, and whatever potential they have right now, they are simply not good enough. And at 22, 23 years old, they're probably not going to, they're certainly not going to fit this style. We need to get rid of them. We can't count on them to be members of the squad, really. If we are, we're going to be hurting ourselves. Do you feel as strongly about that as I do?
See, I do agree with what you're saying, because I feel like there are members of the youth squad that I do think will have a future in Tegar. Bringing it back to the greater question that Colin has probably lost all sight of many comments ago. But I do think there are players that do have a future. I do think that they're on the younger end of the spectrum. I do think that there are some players that are just not going to end up fitting, because I feel like the problem with how we've approached, this is because we've had separate, as I've just said, we've had loads of different managers with loads of different styles of play. There is not one designed style of play that goes throughout the entire club. What has happened is we've gone, we'll play the youth team and we'll figure out which ones are really good. And then they'll come into the first team and they'll learn how to play in the first team. And then they'll learn the style of play that way. Whereas all the top clubs in Europe and all the best clubs in Europe have gone, this is how we're going to play football, regardless of the manager, regardless of the players, regardless of how talented that left back is at running. If that left back can ping passes left, right and centre, no, he's going to be able to run, overlap and cross into the box. I do not care how good he is. I don't care how much he wants to be a third centre back. He's doing it this way because that's the way we do it. And then they get moulded that way. And then the best players who have been moulded step into the first team and become part of the first team. And that's how you've got Barcelona, who have Ansu Fati, Gavi, Ronald Araujo. They've got Oscar Mungueza. They've even got a keeper that's probably going to come through. I cannot remember the name of who's currently on loan at Galatasaray. But they've got tons of players that kind of fit the system, and they can go on a moment's notice. We've got an injury crisis. They can step in and they might end up becoming long-term parts of the squad. In the way that we've done it so far is they now need to spend 6 months training with the first team, and then they even get limited minutes in the first team playing in the odd match. And you're kind of there like, this player looks completely individualistic and he's trying to tread water while wearing 10-ton weights, because he's now doing it in front of Old Trafford, in front of 70,000 people, trying to figure out how this guy wants to play, maybe can play football. And we saw it with Hannibal even recently. Like, Hannibal came in and Ranić, and apparently there's some reports came out that when he played for those 5 minutes against Liverpool, Ranić wasn't happy with how he did it, because he just went about kicking people. Like, because he just wanted to get involved and he wanted to make a mark and he wanted to make his impression in those limited minutes he was given, because he knew that behind him, probably, there isn't a system in place that knows that naturally, as the most, one of the most talented players in the youth team, he will eventually become part of the first team squad in that sort of scenario. And this is what I mean. Like, the thing is that there is an emphasis on Murtaugh, there's an emphasis on Arnold, there's an emphasis on Fletcher to be like, right, to go to Ten Hag and go, find me a coach that you like, that knows you can play your style of football, or bring in a coach, make him play with the first team first, make him a coach with the first team for a year, he'll become your youth coach. And he'll become the youth coach of the main youth team. And players like Kobbie Mainoo, players like Alvaro Fernandez, players like Gerardo, players like Isaac Aaron-Hansen, all of these talented players that were like, are going to be the future of Manchester United, know how to play Ten Hag's game before they even get anywhere near the first team. And that's the thing, because like we said, we've got Scott McTominay, we've got Hannibal Mujibri, I'm trying to think of youth players off the top of my head, who are coming in and they're like, sweet, we've got to find our feet. And the reason they stay in the first team are usually because they make a really good individual impact, not because they just slot in and look fantastic from the start. And if you look at the sorts of like Liverpool, where Curtis Jones has come in, where Trent Alexander-Arnold came in, where Harvey Elliott's come in after a loan spell and some time in the youth team, they look like they've played for Liverpool for years because they're just used to it. And that's the thing with these youth players, I think, is going to be a hard thing of how they fit into Ten Hag's style of play, because it's a very demanding style of play. It's a very exacting style of play. And I think that because we haven't fully figured that out yet, there will be quite a few youth players who probably slip through the net and end up at other clubs and end up becoming stars at other clubs because they're just the best players. But because we're trying to play a certain style of football and trying to play a certain style of play, they probably won't make it United.
Well, if Hannibal Mujibri just come in and tries to hurt people more, I'm assuming that he won that fight over Alex Telles then.
I have shrunk.
Who's to say?
Who's to say? Who's to say it was even them? We don't know.
Right.
Who's to say?
Casey, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure we've gone on quite long enough, but you offered a lot of insight, and we thank you for your time and for staying up late for us because of time difference.
It's no problem. It's nearly a new day here, but I don't mind. It's always good to talk about United.
Is that metaphorically?
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds really possible.
No, it is literally 3 minutes to 12. Like, I should be asleep, but I'm off tomorrow, so you've got the best use of my time.
Well, thank you, Casey. We will be back sometime next week. We're trying to work out time to bring in more exciting new guests such as Casey. But you know, maybe Casey, if you want to come back on sometime this summer, if there's something exciting happening you want to talk about, shoot us a message.
Ring DLC.
Yeah.
So fine. If you want to have me back on, I'm happy to come back on. I do not mind talking about United. It's a great time just laughing about how bad we are.
Yeah, it's better than like watching United right now.
Hey, we got 3 months. I think
he said he
like
watches
that.
Winning Time, and we're working on that. So
that's right. We Nathan and I had the idea for an episode where we cast the 1990s Man United Winning Time. So
Colin, stop recording.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.